Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. You know, each day we live, we have a series of choices of where we spend our time and what to think and how to go about our day. And some people choose to fill their day with positive energy and worthwhile things. And that's why I like uplifting podcasts. This podcast is born from a deep desire to help us all live a happier life, and the firm belief that a powerful way to make that happen is to open our eyes to new ways of seeing life. So hopefully today and this time together, we'll get a new perspective of how to think and live better. And as always, take a few minutes to share this podcast with a friend. It just might be what they need in their life today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about getting out of your own way. Let me ask you a simple question. What's the dream you have in your heart most of your life today? Is there a prevailing ambition that you're holding on to? For example, some of you may be building a business and your ambition is that you can build it to provide financial freedom for you and your family. Some of you are trying to do what might seem impossible, raise happy and healthy kids. Others are reaching health goals or losing weight or overcoming a habit or advancing in your profession, and the list goes on. We may all have a dream or ambition, but strangely enough, what keeps most people from achieving those dreams is not the lack of opportunity, resources, or even talent. More often than not, the greatest obstacle is the person staring back at them in the mirror. Getting out of your own way means learning to recognize and dismantle the internal barriers, fear, procrastination, habit, overthinking, and negative self-talk that prevents us from doing what we think we can and should do. And the truth is, we've all gotten in our own way from time to time. We wait for things to be perfect before we start. We fear failure. We give in to limiting self-talk. We let procrastination have its way. We overthink things. We compare ourselves to others too much. We lack consistency. We give in to boredom. We refuse to ask for help, and we might settle too much. These are just some of the hidden barriers to reaching our goals. You know, my favorite story about getting out of your own way is about Joanne. Her father was an aircraft engineer working for Rolls-Royce, and they lived in Winterbourne, a large village in South England, situated on the north fringe of Bristol. There, Joanne and her younger sister Diane grew up attending St. Michael's Primary School. As a teenager, she loved to read books by Jessica Mitford, including the book Hans and Rebels. When she was young, something took root inside her, and she started to dream. She decided she wanted to be a writer, and her dream was to publish a major work. But it seemed there were always problems in her young life. Nothing came easy. Her teenage life was filled with strife. Her mother had MS and was often sick. Her father was angry and bitter, and she fought constantly with him. Her English teacher remembers her as not exceptional, but bright and good at English. Well, after graduation, she applied to Oxford University. She had always planned to attend Oxford, but in response to her application, all she received was a letter of denial. It was devastating. She had always thought she'd attend Oxford, so she decided to study French and classics at the University of Exeter. After graduation, she found work as a researcher for Amnesty International. For whatever reason, Joanne let her doubts about herself, maybe from not getting into Oxford or other things, or procrastination, or buying into excuses, keep her from her dream. Then another devastating blow, her mother died. And her mother's death affected her deeply. So after a breakup with her boyfriend and her mother's death, she escaped to Portugal to teach English. There she met a man and they were married and they had a child together, a daughter. But then he turned abusive. In 1993, after one especially bad night in which he dragged her out of their home into the street, slapping her into submission, she took her daughter and fled. She went to live with her sister in Edinburgh, Scotland. 7 years after graduating from college, years wasted with no progress towards her dream, she said, "I'm the biggest failure I know." Her marriage had failed, she was jobless, she was a single mother, and her dreams were nowhere in sight. She signed up for welfare benefits. She suffered from deep depression and even contemplated suicide. She wondered, who am I? She had little sense of self. She felt like she was always on the verge of something great, but never able to overcome the trappings of everyday life. It seemed she had external trials, yes, but she was always letting herself, her doubt, her fears get in her way. Now, have you ever felt on the verge of doing what you were meant to do, but your way of thinking or living or putting things off was holding you back? Well, for Joanne, all of that changed one day. She said, I stopped pretending I was anything other than who I was, and I determined more than I had ever determined before what I was meant to do, to write. I knew inside I was a writer. I had a beautiful daughter and a typewriter, and that is all that I needed. She always knew what she could do, but it was when she stopped letting the things get in her way that she started to do it. So each day she would walk her baby in the stroller to help her sleep and stop to write in the local cafe. First, she would write the chapters in longhand on a notepad. Then at home, she would type them in a manual typewriter. Then she would sneak into the local college library to put them on computer, the entire time hoping they wouldn't realize that she wasn't a student. For 2 years, she labored day after day and finally finished the story. The book was submitted to 12 publishing houses. All 12 turned her down. After more than a year of knocking on doors, an independent publisher in London, who didn't like the book, agreed to purchase the book after giving it to his daughter to read, and she loved it. So he purchased the book and had a publisher print copies. In February the next year, the book won Children's Book of the Year in Britain. At auction the following year, the book sold for £105,000 to Scholastic in the United States. The second book, a sequel to the first, also won Book of the Year 2 years later. In total, all 7 Harry Potter books written by Joanne Kathleen Rowling have sold hundreds of millions of copies all over the world and are translated into 65 different languages. In 2007, J.K. Rowling was named the runner-up person of the year by Time magazine and is estimated to be worth $1 billion. Now, I don't believe that J.K. Rowling has the corner on the market for having a dream, but she did do something that few of us do. She stopped pretending. She set aside those things that got in her way, and she did what she knew she could do. I think we pretend. Do you pretend? We pretend that someday we'll do what we originally set out to do. We pretend that we're really engaged when we let even the smallest daily activities take priority of the more important goals in our life. We pretend we have a goal when we really haven't committed to it. We go on pretending, but days come and go. Life circumstances push us where they want, and we live in a bit of an erosion of our hopes and dreams. And if you were to ask me, the characteristic that defines those who reach their goals, that defines people who avoid the procrastination trap, and the characteristic that will make all the difference in your efforts, it's this: exercise integrity in the moment of choice. It means this: once you've decided you'll do something, when the moment of choice arrives, act with integrity. Do what you say you'll do. If you'll say you'll do something important at 10 a.m. tomorrow when 10 a.m. comes, regardless of mood or circumstances, you do it. When you act with integrity in the moment of choice, you not only move closer to your desired goal, but there's a change, a mental, emotional, and I believe physiological change that happens inside you. You become more powerful, able to act, and you have an inner peace that becomes part of you. A life with this kind of integrity is a true source of personal worth. The late Stephen Covey said, as you live with this type of integrity, your sense of identity, control, and inner directedness will infuse you with both exhilaration and peace. When I learned this concept from Dr. Covey as a college student, he also taught that with most things in life, there's a simple principle of stimulus and response. All animals respond to stimulus. You hear a bell, you come running for food. You hear certain words of hurt, you have feelings of anger. But what differentiates us from all other creatures in the animal kingdom is that God has given us a space between stimulus and response. In that space, in that moment, is where life's battles are won. There and then, we can choose to act differently or respond to that stimulus in a more productive way. In this space, we gain habits, character, and honestly, we can change anything. So when procrastination begins to enter into your work and life, when you feel like it's you that's getting in the way of your business, then remember, there's a space between stimulus and response. Choose in that space to exercise integrity in the moment of choice. Not long ago, I was talking with a woman who was building a business. She was super committed to her goal and had some initial success. In her first year, she reached her first milestone, but then things stalled. She fell into a cycle that was hard to step out of. When she would organize her day, the stress and worry of not meeting expectations actually caused her to procrastinate. The overthinking kept her from approaching her work with the freedom and enthusiasm that she experienced when she first started. And this took her on a downward cycle until she didn't feel like working the business that she used to love. In short, she needed to get out of her own way, and she asked me the simple question, how do you get out of your own way? And maybe you, like me, have set out some health or weight loss goals and experienced the same thing. You have some success, but later the lack of success or not sticking to your habits causes you to stress and worry, which causes poor eating, or procrastination keeps you from getting out of bed to exercise when you should. You get in your own way. So what are these invisible barriers that we build that get in our way, and how can we remove those barriers? Let's talk about the first. Waiting for no risk or perfect conditions is one of the most dangerous forms of self-sabotage. Here's how it works. Often we're inspired to take certain action. It may be building a business or starting a new habit. And instead of starting right away and taking on the risk of failure or discomfort, we wait until the perfect conditions may happen. I'll wait to begin that exercise regime until the weather is better, or I'll start that business after the holidays, or whatever the reason might be. And then, most of us never end up doing what we set out to do. Best-selling author Anne Lamott says, "This happens to writers all the time. For the most part, the first drafts of anything a writer does are not the best drafts. And this can sidetrack a lot of people. But that first draft can tell you what you don't like and what needs to change. And we as people are the same. We often don't start immediately because we want that first draft to be perfect." In the late 1990s, Sarah Blakely was selling fax machines door-to-door in Florida. It wasn't glamorous work, and she knew she wanted something more. And one day, she cut the feet off a pair of pantyhose to create a smoother look under her clothes. That tiny, almost silly experiment sparked an idea. Most people might have laughed it off or dismissed it, but Sarah took the risk of betting on herself. With no background in fashion, no investors, and only $5,000 in savings, she set out quickly to create her product. She cold-called hosiery mills, pitched relentlessly, and endured rejection after rejection. For 2 years, she heard no at every turn. But finally, one mill owner in North Carolina decided to give her a chance. When Neiman Marcus agreed to carry her product, Sarah went to the stores and personally demonstrated her product, Spanx, to shoppers in the dressing room. It was risky. She could have embarrassed herself and wasted her savings, but instead, her willingness to immediately take risks and persist through discomfort turned Spanx into a billion-dollar company. Sarah Blakely became the world's youngest self-made female billionaire at the time because she wasn't afraid to risk failure in pursuit of possibility. Now, another way we get in our own way is the fear of failure. Almost all of us have experienced this. As a teenager, I didn't try things that now I wish I'd tried because of the fear of failure at the time. And I saw this in my kids as well. But we, as adults, often do the same thing. In 2007, Brian Chesky was a 26-year-old designer living in San Francisco. He had just quit his job. He was broke, couldn't even afford rent. That month, a design conference was coming to town, and all the hotels were booked. Chesky and his roommate, Joe, had a wild idea. Why not rent our air mattress on the apartment floor to conference attendees and serve them breakfast in the morning? They called it Air Bed and Breakfast. Three guests showed up, each paying $80. It was a small win, but it sparked something. Chesky thought, what if people all over the world opened their own homes like this? But almost immediately, fear of failure set in. When they pitched the idea to investors, most investors laughed in their faces. Renting a stranger's couch, or worse, letting strangers into your own home seemed absurd. One venture capitalist told Chesky, this is such a bad idea. It's in the top 10 worst ideas I've ever heard. They applied to Y Combinator, a prestigious startup accelerator. The founder, Paul Graham, later admitted he thought the idea was weird, but he liked Chesky and he liked his grit, and that got them in. Still, Airbnb struggled. They maxed out credit cards, lived off cheap cereal, and launched the site multiple times with little traction. In 2008, during the presidential election, they were desperate for cash. Chesky came up with a gimmick, designing limited edition cereal boxes called Obama O's and Cap'n McCain's. They sold for $40 each as collector's items. Shockingly, the stunt worked, earning them $30, just enough to keep Airbnb alive for a few months. Behind the scenes, Chesky admitted he was terrified. If this failed, he wouldn't be just broke. He'd be branded as the guy who thought people could sleep on strangers' floors. But he didn't quit. Instead, he leaned into customer behavior. He and Joe personally visited hosts, taking photos of apartments themselves, helping people set up listings, and slowly building trust. That relentless persistence pushed Airbnb through its fear barrier. Within 2 years, they had thousands of listings worldwide, and by 2001, they had over 1 million bookings. Today, Airbnb is valued at more than $70 billion. Chesky often reflects that their greatest breakthroughs came when they were the most afraid. The fear of failure nearly crushed them, but it also forced them to be scrappy, creative, and resilient in ways they would have never been otherwise. Now, another way we get in our own way is overthinking. Sometimes we confuse thinking with progress. We research endlessly, we plan in detail, or debate scenarios in our minds, and in truth, overthinking is a form of self-sabotage disguised as diligence. Overthinking sabotages progress in several ways. It delays action. By endlessly evaluating options, you postpone starting, and then you never start. It creates anxiety and stress. Constantly rehashing possibilities triggers stress and takes energy and focus. It weakens confidence. Overthinking fosters self-doubt. It leads to poor decisions. Ironically, excessive thinking can reduce decision quality, and it consumes time and energy. Mental loops take energy away from creative problem solving. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, recognized overthinking as a growth killer. He created the 70% rule. Make a decision when you have roughly 70% of the information you want. Waiting for 90 to 100% certainty often causes missed opportunities. Many people don't realize, but 74% of Amazon's operating profits came from AWS. AWS is Amazon's cloud computing platform that provides computer power and storage for the web, AI, databases, and software. Companies and governments rent capacity from AWS. Amazon's move into AWS, or Amazon Web Services, could have been delayed indefinitely if Amazon had waited for perfect market data. By the early 2000s, Amazon, still known mainly as an online bookseller, had built from scratch one of the world's biggest websites. But adding new features had become frustratingly slow. Software engineering teams were spending 70% of their time building a storage system and appropriate computing infrastructure. During a 2003 offsite at Jeff Bezos' house, the company's top managers decided that AWS could be a business. They weren't sure if there was a market. They weren't sure if they could do it. Why would anyone imagine this company could build a business selling technology services to software developers? The decision to plunge ahead revealed a subtle distinction that outsiders didn't understand. The world saw Amazon as an online retailer, but the company's leaders never thought of it that way. They thought of it as a technology company that had simply applied its technology to the retail space first. Well, it took 3 years before AWS went live, but it was a huge success. No one, not even at Amazon, foresaw how massive a business cloud computing would be, or AWS's dominance in that space. Another hidden way that we get in our own way is lack of consistency. And it's consistency that actually creates a lot of success in business, parenting, or our personal lives. But in today's day of instant everything, we crave instant results. And the truth is, very few results are instant. Why do we crave instant results? Well, biology and brain chemistry. Our brains are actually wired to seek quick satisfaction. Cultural pressure. Movies, social media, and entrepreneurial success stories often highlight overnight success. And we internalize those ideas that if success is taking too long, we're doing something wrong, which always isn't the truth. Fear of failure. Waiting for results forces us to face uncertainty. Impatience. Many people, like me, underestimate how long mastery, wealth, or personal growth really takes. And while bursts of effort feel productive, they rarely produce lasting results. The key is small, repeated actions over time. Writing 200 words every day eventually yields a book. Saving $100 per month eventually builds a nest egg. Practicing a sport 30 minutes a day leads to mastery far faster than sporadic all-day sessions once a month. Consistency compounds results. Intensity, however, without regularity often leads to burnout and frustrations. You know, Serena Williams didn't become a tennis legend overnight. From a young age, she and her sister Venus practiced relentlessly under the coaching of their father. Serena's daily training, drills, conditioning, and match practice built skills that seemed almost effortless on the court, but were the result of decades of consistent effort. Many aspiring athletes burn out by seeking quick results, and they don't realize that it's steady practice, long-term consistency, that beats short-term bursts of effort. James Dyson, the inventor of the bagless vacuum cleaner, created over 5,000 prototypes before finding a design that worked. Now, another way we get in our own way is our unwillingness to ask for help. I know I don't ask for help because I don't want to look stupid, or I feel uncomfortable admitting I don't know, and a host of other reasons, and perhaps you're the same. Lin-Manuel Miranda credits asking for help as essential to the creation of his show, Hamilton. Thomas Kail was a close friend who directed Miranda's initial 2009 performance at the White House, and he stayed with the project through its Broadway run, and he helped shape the musical's theatrical form. Alex Lacamoire was vital in creating the show's distinctive sound. Andy Blackenbuehler was key to the show's storytelling, using dance to communicate emotion and character and plot without dialogue. So, today, as you go about building your business or overcoming a habit, what if you decided to do one simple thing? Ask for help. You may be amazed at what happens by taking the simple action. In your business, call up a person you've seen having success and ask for help and see what happens. It just may surprise you. Procrastination is another way that we get in our own way. We convince ourselves that tomorrow will be better, a time when we're less tired or more inspired or better prepared, but more often than not, tomorrow never comes. Writer Stephen Pressfield, in his book, The Art of War, describes procrastination as the most insidious form of resistance. He argues that the longer we wait to do the work we were meant to do, the more painful it becomes. For Pressfield himself, the turning point came when he stopped waiting for inspiration and simply showed up to write every day. By refusing to wait for the perfect conditions, he got out of his own way and became a prolific author. Theodore Roosevelt once said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." And in the age of social media, it's easy to measure our progress against the curated highlights of others. And this comparison leads to discouragement, envy, and self-doubt, leading ourselves to get in our own way. But the truth is, progress shouldn't be measured against others. It should be measured against our own past selves. Olympian swimmer Michael Phelps often spoke about this. Despite being the most decorated Olympian of all time, he admitted that early in his career, he struggled when comparing his performance to others. His turning point came when he decided to compete not against fellow swimmers, but against his own records. This mindset freed him from the weight of comparison and allowed him to perform at his peak. So, here's the point of this podcast today. Getting out of your own way happens in small, consistent steps and buying into faith instead of fear. You know, 2 years ago, my daughter-in-law and I ran a half marathon. My son wanted to run with us, but it seemed his self-talk was filled with disbelief. "I'm not built for this. I'll quit halfway. People will laugh." So we sat on the sidelines while we ran. She ran faster than me, but we both finished. But now, he's in training to run with his spouse, and I'll cheer them on. And how is he doing this? By starting small, running a single mile, then three, then five. And by doing this, he's proving that his own doubts are not reality. Each step chips away at the false narrative, and he is seeing that, in fact, he can do what he set out to do. What about you? Try putting into practice a few of the things we've talked about today and watch. The invisible beliefs that get in your own way will slowly fall away, and you will find you can do what you set out to do. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.